Its current state on 90.5 WKAR, bird watchers and ornithologists are likely to remember the winter of 2013-14. That was the year they witnessed a huge invasion of snowy owls here in the Great Lakes region and in the Northeast. It was the largest in decades. The influx led to Project Snowstorm, a nonprofit that uses GPS transmitters to track and study these striking birds. This year's been different. The first snowy owls arrived earlier than usual, but fewer overall have been showing up here in Michigan. Joining us by phone to update us on Michigan snowy owls and what might be going on is Chris Neary. Chris is the lead owl bander at Whitefish Point Bird Observatory, way up in Paradise, Michigan. Chris, welcome to Current State.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And also joining us by phone from Baltimore, Maryland, David Brinker, one of the founders of Project Snowstorm. David, welcome.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Chris, take us back to the winter of 2013-14. What did the owl invasion that year look like here in Michigan?
It was really widespread, and snowies were recorded in 62 of our counties, hundreds of them. Unfortunately for us right here, many of them moved out of the UP down into the lower peninsula. The area around Sault Ste. Marie, the agricultural fields, are one of the most reliable spots. But they moved south. They apparently didn't find food up here, but they were really widespread and in big numbers down in the lower peninsula.
And looking back, do we know what led to that eruption of birds?
Well, I think Dave could probably clarify this, but it seemed like most of them that year were young birds, so they had really good breeding success up in the Arctic, as opposed to last year when it seemed like most that we were working with anyway were adult birds.
David, is that how you interpret it?
Yeah, one of the collaborators in Project Snowstorm is J.F. Therian from Hawk Mountain. And he spends his summers up in the Arctic working on breeding snowy owls. And in the summer of 2013, it was the best summer they had ever had. And actually, one of the nests he had something like 75 lemmings around it, and the owls just produced huge numbers of young that year. And that's really what fueled the 2013 eruption into the lower 48 here.
And how many snowy owls were banded or tagged during that eruption, David?
There were hundreds tagged by a lot of people, you know, banding owls, and Project Snowstorm itself put our high-tech transmitters on 22 of those individuals.
What is the overall larger goal of Project Snowstorm, David?
What we're looking to do is get a better understanding of the habitats that snowy owls need when they're down here in the winter. Do they concentrate mostly on shorelines? Are agricultural areas important? Really, nobody had ever really worked seriously on their winter movements. And so we took advantage of the opportunity to put together a big collaborative team, get these high-tech transmitters out on them, and learn really what they do when they're down here in the winter.
We're speaking with David Brinker of Project Snowstorm and Chris Neary from the Whitefish Point Bird Observatory about snowy owls and the appearances they've made in Michigan this season. Chris, there was an early appearance of some snowies in Michigan this fall, but some were malnourished. What do you think may be the cause for that?
It's apparently common for these. They seem to be young birds that move down in mid-October, a little earlier than normal. They do a long migration to get down here, which, you know, takes a lot of their energy supplies, their fat stores, and they need to find hunting grounds once they get down here, and apparently they just weren't able to do that. There were six turned in to a rehabber in Marquette. We had two from Whitefish Bay turned into us dead. As far as I know, they were all young birds. The two that we had turned in here were both young males. So they're just making a long migration down here, not that experienced and not finding good hunting grounds in time, unfortunately.
Chris, I think a lot of our listeners might be familiar with the snowy owl, Hedwig. Harry Potter's famous pet is a snowy, but describe them for us, please. Their appearance, their size?
They're probably the largest by weight in North America. People are probably familiar with great horned owls. They're very similar in size. Typically, the adult males are the ones that become very white. Young females are more heavily marked. And like you said, people are familiar with them from Harry Potter, and they perch in obvious places a lot of times. So not only birders, but anybody who sees them will recognize them, which is great.
So you're apt to see them in a tree. Where I think one of you mentioned that you're apt to see them in a farm field as well. Is it split up? Where else might you see a snowy owl?
I mean, they will show up anywhere. They've shown up in cities. They're drawn to airports because of the open space. But in Michigan, these birds will hunt waterfowl. So we have so much shoreline, which is what makes Michigan attractive. Plus, the farm fields will hunt waterfowl, and they'll also hunt voles. So if there's farm fields that have a good rodent population, they're drawn to them. And then along the shorelines where there's waterfowl or gulls, they're drawn to them also.
David Brinker, explain how the tracking of these owls works. I know they can be banded or tagged. What's the difference?
Banded is basically a metal leg band that has a unique number that is tracked through the USGS's bird banding laboratory, and there to find out where the bird went, how long it lived, someone's got to find it and report the band number. So you get data rather randomly. What we did was put high-tech transmitters on the back of the birds that are solar-powered, and it works on a snowy owl because when they roost in the daytime, most of them roost out in the open sun, and the transmitter can get recharged. And in that, there's a little tiny GPS, like in most people's cell phones, and a cell phone module. And the GPS takes very accurate locations as often as every 15 or 30 seconds if we wanted to collect data that frequently. But we have ours set to collect data about every 30 minutes. And then about once a week, it wakes up the cell phone and says, am I in the cell network? If it detects a cell signal, it downloads all the data. So one of the downsides that people often mention is that, well, when you go back to the Arctic, then you lose track of your owls. And that's only sort of. You know, they go out of the cell network, but the receivers can archive over 10,000 points. And if the owls survive the summer and come back down into the cell network here, then we pop a few champagne corks because we get huge downloads of data from the birds as they come back.
I'm sure. We're talking with David Brinker of Project Snowstorm and Chris Neary from the Whitefish Point Bird Observatory about snowy owls in Michigan. Chris, what kinds of data do you get from these transmitters? What do we learn from that?
Well, as Dave mentioned, it's the most extensive study on wintering snowy owls. So you do learn the habitats that they're using, how much they're traveling. Last year, the two that we got transmitters on in eastern Chippewa County just happened to be in adjacent territories, and we saw how defined those territories were and how much there were two adult females, just very rarely crossed into each other's territories. Then we got to see them wander around a bit. They had spent months in the agricultural fields near Pickford. And then as the lake started thawing, we saw both of them head out to the lakes and spend some time out on the ice floes, probably hunting waterfowl and gulls once that opportunity opens up to them.
David, you have a few stories of hearing, as it were, from tagged owls after some time has passed. Tell us about the owl named Buena Vista.
Buena Vista was the second owl that we put a transmitter on. It was sort of cutting edge, and that we really were just getting a little bit of experience. That owl was hanging out in central Wisconsin in prairie chicken habitat, eating primarily voles and mice and things like that. But we got about a winter's worth of data out of it, and in March of 2014, we had our last contact with it as it went north. Didn't hear from it for a long time until the 1st of November this year. All of a sudden, it did a monthly reality check, and it had come back and was down near Lake Manitoba and started dumping all this accumulated data. Now, we're waiting to hear from it again. It was right on the edge of the cell network, and it may have moved into a place with no service, but if it moves a little bit further south and the battery gets a good charge, we expect to see tremendous data on where this bird's been.
But you essentially received a text message from an owl?
Yep, that's how it works.
Chris, have you encountered any owls for a second time?
We have not yet. We're still hopeful that, you know, we got them out on adult females last year, so they may still be hanging up north, but we're obviously hoping they come back.
We have been speaking.
Yes,
David,
that,
continue.
We had five owls come back last winter from the previous winter, so we've got tracks from a number of them, and you can see what they did during their summers up in the Arctic, and we even added a transmitter to one last year called Baltimore that had been trapped down here in the Baltimore area and banded with a traditional band the first winter, and it came back to the same airport the second winter and said, okay, we're going to put a transmitter on you and see where you go.
So interesting. We've been speaking with David Brinker of Project Snowstorm, also Chris Neary from the Whitefish Point Bird Observatory, about snowy owls and the appearances they have been making here in Michigan. Many thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been fun.